Welcome to All Analytics Conversations. This is Jim Connolly. I'm editor of allanalytics.com. Today we're talking about fraud. You know what it is. It's lying, cheating, stealing. Our focus in this talk is on using analytics to combat fraud in healthcare. But there are plenty of other industry sectors that can utilize the techniques that we're discussing to fight fraud in their own fields. Our guest today is Doug Cedrus, an independent healthcare consultant who specializes in advising healthcare organizations on how to detect and address fraud and waste. Doug retired last year as director of the Corporate and Financial Investigations Department of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. Doug, welcome to All Analytics. How are you today?
Very good, Jim. Thank you very much for inviting me, and I'd also like to thank and welcome everybody who's listening.
That's great. Doug, before we get into the discussion, let me add a note for the listeners. We welcome your questions and comments on the chat board below, and we'll address as many as we can during the next half hour, and more when Doug joins us on the text chat after the audio segment. To get the discussion started, I invite listeners to introduce yourselves to your peers on the chat board and perhaps share your own observation on how data can address fraud and waste in healthcare. Doug, to get started, could you explain, how you got into this role as a fraud fighter?
Yes. Before, I was with Blue Cross and Blue Shield for just under 25 years. Previous to that, I retired as a detective lieutenant from a Detroit Metropolitan Police Department. So in a long period of time, I've been exposed to complex investigations, undercover, investigations that delve into many areas. But once I got to Blue Cross, we started focusing on healthcare fraud, waste, and abuse. And then as the contracts came in, specifically with government contracts, there's a mandate for data analytics. And then we found that our customers had an expectation of analytics and data and how can you do more for us. So with that, we started looking for a data analytics platform. We found one that was rules-based. It was okay, but we didn't find much value out of that. And then we undertook an extensive investigation into identify a better platform for us to create a real robust data analytics opportunity.
As I understand it, you ended up with a SaaS-based system, correct?
We did, and we put out RFPs, and we also engaged an industry expert, and we looked to Gartner for advice. And I would suggest to the audience, if you're new and you're looking for a solution, to actually engage people that can help you. As a user or prospective customer, you can look at things and it may look good, but you really have to understand the guts and the meat of it. And what we also did is we went to a hosted solution so we could gain the expertise from SaaS rather than to try to develop that or to garden that within our own corporation.
Yeah. How did you use advanced analytics while you were at Blue Cross, and what did you accomplish?
Well, what we found is we took a look at providers over a five-year period who were either arrested, criminally convicted, and or administratively sanctioned. And we started seeing patterns within certain provider groups. And we knew that we were just basically catching fraud after it had already been in a cycle for sometimes up to 2 years. We just weren't getting it on the front end where we needed to get to really get some value out of it. And really the goal in any analytics program is to identify and catch fraud as early in the cycle as you can. And what that does for you is that creates savings for your customers, savings for the company, ensuring the integrity of the provider community, and most importantly, ensuring patient safety.
Now, what were some of the types of scams that you came across or you continue to come across today?
Well, pharmaceutical has risen to be one of the highest payouts for any healthcare company. Unfortunately, people have been exposed to and become addicted to or reliant upon certain pharmaceuticals, Oxycontin, Vicodin, and so forth. And we found that there were people that were exchanging their healthcare information to get the drugs and then turning a blind eye when the provider would then bill for ancillary services, medical services that they never had, or they were selling their information. And there's also a great significant opportunity with healthcare identity theft. And then one thing we were using our analytics for was migration tracking. Tracking these groups of people or the people that involve themselves in medical identity theft to sell these contracts, where are they going, what providers are they going to, so that we could create a whole view of the fraud activity as it was occurring.
Now, that's interesting. I mean, we've all heard about, you know, identity theft, you know, being stolen for medical purposes. And, you know, and it's I've heard of drug dealers who basically get overprescribed themselves and they sell off their drugs. But the idea of selling your identity to somebody who's going to abuse it is pretty unique and sounds pretty desperate.
It is. And with the analytics, what we were finding is we were finding pyramids of people where several people would become involved in an activity with a provider, and then they would go out and recruit other people, and then those individuals would recruit yet more individuals. So there was an entire network of willing participants. Sometimes they were co-workers in factories. We had a group of people that were involved in a school system. And sometimes they were getting money out of their just allowing their benefits to be used. And the deficit is to the people that can't afford health care. And the ones that should be receiving health care, that's draining money from a very fragile system that could be used to support those who do not have health care.
What role did modeling and predictive analytics play in your initiatives?
It was a large role. Initially, the challenge, and the challenge not only that faced us but with other providers, is that the current systems that are being used either don't or can't share data. Data is created across multiple disparate systems. We aggregated six different systems of data into one source of truth, which was a very intensive initiative that we undertook prior to sending our data to SAS. But it worked well for us because the old adage of garbage in, garbage out, if you don't normalize your data, if you don't have good data, you're not going to get the benefit of the return from the models and the algorithms. The business rules for integration, cleansing, and standardization are frequently inconsistent. And what we found is within our organization, the developers and the users were often unaware of all the systems of creation. So again, when we created a single source of truth, it provided the opportunity for all touch points to have the same view of the program integrity related data. And we started moving that to payment integrity rather than just looking at it from one view.
Can you put a price tag on what healthcare fraud is costing us these days?
Typically, the range is from 3 to 10% of the healthcare spend. You know, in the healthcare dollars are in the trillions. So there is significant waste and abuse. As I indicated, we had a lot of complex schemes that we identified through data analytics, and especially as we move towards more advanced analytics, that would suggest to us that there are a significant population of people that feel, I'm not paying for it, so who cares? But in the end result, mm-hmm. we all pay for it. The customers, the groups, the businesses pay for it. It takes away those dollars, again, that could be used either to reduce the cost of the products that they're making or to provide health care for those who are less fortunate.
Now, what happened to some of the people that you identified, you know, people that you caught?
Our focus at Blue Cross and Blue Shield in Michigan was to prosecute if the the data and if the facts supported that. We frequently worked with the FBI, Office of Inspector General, and to engage not only the loss from Blue Cross and Blue Shield, but also the losses from Medicare and Medicaid, because frequently none of those systems are immune from the probing to get those health care dollars. We would find a lot of situations where once medical identity theft was identified and a grouping of contracts was acquired, it would be sold around to different people who would stand up, for example, durable medical equipment companies or other kind of fly-by-night storefront organizations, where they would build the contracts and then they would sell those contracts to somebody else. So there's a whole network of fraudulent activity ongoing within that space.
Now, some years ago, before we even started talking about analytics, I was a court reporter, and there were a lot of fraud cases, and you know, some of them were medical fraud. But in most cases, once there was enough evidence to indict somebody, they tended to plead out. Now, there was very few of these cases went to trial. Is that true today, and is it because you end up with a pretty good paper trail?
It is, and the adage of investigations, going back to my days at the police department, is always keep it simple and focus on what is the real fraud. A provider may be involved in fraud, but they may also be doing other things that are kind of on the fence. You know, there's probably an educational component to that part of it. If you keep it simple, if you aggregate your losses between Medicare, Medicaid, and Blue Cross, now it demonstrates that the person is specifically intending to commit fraud against several different governmental programs and private programs. You take that forward. Most times those providers can afford high-priced attorneys who will advise them, hey, it's in your best interest to just plead and get away from this. Otherwise, an extended trial is just going to create more problems for you.
Now, you know, we commonly use the terms fraud and waste in the same sentence, and I notice in your bio that, you know, you get involved with both in terms of identifying it. There would seem to be differences between the two, if only in the presence of the word intent, when you're talking about fraud versus waste, which is could be carelessness. How do you see analytics techniques being used to combat waste?
Well, we looked at it, fraud, waste, and abuse. And what we did early on with our solution is to socialize that to a number of other departments within the corporation, to our audit department, to our claims department, and also to medical policy. And by doing that, what you create is a cyclical process where the SIU becomes a voice at the table, and it's not just the unit that's out there chasing the bad guys trying to identify fraud schemes. When you use analytics, you're getting those three components of fraud, waste, and abuse. So the key is to take something that may not be prosecutable or may not be the bailiwick of the SIU and give it to the audit department or give it to the claims area. Now you're creating value within the organization, and it starts moving towards a center of excellence. And as I indicated earlier, when you have a normalized data stream, one source of truth, people look to that source of truth for decision making, even up to the C-suite. How can we save money? What are we looking at that will make us more effective as an organization?
Now, when you say SIU, special investigations or some unit, something like that?
Yeah, special investigations unit.
Yeah. Doug, we have a question from the audience. Let me just run it by you. And audience member asks, you know, how is payment integrity different from fraud based in abuse? Or is payment integrity just a subset of it?
Payment integrity is what I would suggest any organization should achieve. What that does, as I indicated, if you find fraud, waste, or abuse, you take those other components of what you're looking at through your analytical evaluation, and you give it to the area that can best address it. We were even taking rejected claims because a new provider looking for a source of opportunity will frequently probe the system with rejected claims until they hit the right indicators where the claim will get paid, and then they're off to doing whatever they think they can do to gain revenue. So payment integrity is what I would recommend any organization should move itself towards. That way, you're taking a global look at all your claims processing. You're taking those identifiers of fraud, waste, or abuse, taking it to your decision makers, and suggesting to them that we've got problems here and maybe these should be addressed. Incorporating marketing in there so that they can go back to the groups and explain to them, we're vulnerable in this area. You may want to consider a different benefit structure.
Mm-hmm. Looking ahead, how do you see advanced analytics, you know, even now we're talking about prescriptive analytics, you know, going beyond predictive analytics. How do you, what type of work do you see them doing for healthcare organizations maybe a year or two out?
Well, what we were looking at is what would be called a hybrid approach. So what you're doing is you're moving from base analytics, where we first started out with our rules-based program, out-of-the-box COTS-type operation that would you know, give you rules, but the rules may not be tailored to your demographics. When you start moving towards advanced analytics, what you're doing is now you're taking your demographics, your learnings, you're pushing them back into the system. And then as you move forward, you get into an advanced analytics scenario. And what you also are doing is you're facilitating machine learning. So now your neural networks and your everything that the IT people can explain much better than I can. I know what they are, but I would not hazard to try to explain them in the depth. Those learnings can take you to that next level, to prescriptive, where you're looking at text analytics, visualization, geospatial recognition of your provider communities, your demographics. So those are the kind of things that will take you forward.
Now, it's one thing I noticed, that one of the comments coming in from the audience went back to your point about some of the scammers being, you know, fly-by-night suppliers. And it just says, I mean, and the audience member pointed out, you got to know who you're doing business with. You know, and I guess that applies not only to the healthcare organization, but to the patient too.
Exactly. And what, again, going back to keeping it simple, you have to get out of the office, you have to go and knock on doors, and you have to understand what's going on out there in the field. And that's where we at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Michigan, our component of investigative staff was for the most part prior law enforcement. So we were used to talking to people, taking it maybe a step beyond, and you have to be very careful when you're dealing with providers. They may just not understand what they're doing. They may need education. But if you go out there and you find a storefront with a wheelchair sitting inside and maybe a typewriter but nobody there, then that doesn't suggest that that's a viable organization. That's not somebody you want to do business with. So there's a lot of knocking on doors, a lot of talking to people, a lot of tell me what you're doing. Help me understand why you're billing this way. And then start moving that towards either an investigation or an educational component. The educational aspect helps because if you identify something and you educate the individual, if he or she keeps doing it, now you have a better basis to go to a prosecutor to say, this individual is not paying attention here.
Now, as you see fraud cases coming across the news, I know one thing I've noticed over the years is a lot of the people who are charged with fraud in all types of businesses, but particularly in the medical field, they tend to be like sole practitioner type people, you know, like a doctor, you know, with no partners or anything. And maybe someone who's had a career that hasn't been terribly successful. And that, you know, that's pretty easy to identify that person might present a problem. But how about within the big organizations, you know, a five hospital chain or something like that? How common is fraud in that type of environment?
Typically, and I'm speaking from the aspect of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Michigan, the contracts that we had with facilities or hospitals, made it reasonably difficult for them to step out of the bounds and commit fraud. However, urgent care centers were set up rather haphazardly to try to offset people going to emergency rooms, and then there was some fraud in that space that we identified. You find a sole practitioner, and what we were also finding, I was a member of the credentialing committee. We would have an individual attempt to come into the Michigan network that had been sanctioned in, for example, Arizona. They were sanctioned in California. Then they were sanctioned in Illinois, and now they're back up to Michigan. So you have to be very astute in trying to identify who your providers are. And again, it goes back to catch the fraud as early as you can in a cycle to maintain the integrity of that provider community.
Yeah, you'd think that somebody moves around that much is going to raise a red flag here and there. Even if you don't use analytics, you know, you think somebody in the regulatory body would recognize this. But apparently that's not the case, huh?
No. And again, it goes to demographics. For example, in Michigan, there's a preponderance of factory workers and blue-collar type individuals who are customers of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Michigan. By working in factories, standing on their feet, they tend to have more podiatry issues than somebody that may have a group that is predominantly desk workers. So when you start looking at your analytics, the thing that we used to apply to it that we called street smarts is, why are these people doing what they're doing? Why does this particular provider have this increase in claims over other providers? Maybe because that individual has a specialty like a cardiologist and he or she's getting referrals. So that, again, is where the visual analytics helps tremendously, because you can take a picture of your analytical extract and then say, oh, I see why this is happening because of this and because of that. So when you start applying what we call street smarts and you triage, you know, you get a mass of data. You have to bring it down and make it simple and make it understandable. Otherwise, you're just swimming in a data pool and you can't get your head above water.
Now, you mentioned earlier that, you know, most of the people that were in your unit were former law enforcement. Many of our listeners don't have an investigative unit, let alone a good-sized one with staff with former cops. What kind of role can analytics play in enabling a smaller company to identify fraud? Without, you know, that human resource that you guys had.
Well, and I didn't mean to sidestep the value of our analysts. They were tremendous in helping us out. They were not former law enforcement, but they knew how to look at the data and understand the data. So I would suggest that if there was a smaller company or a company that did not have former law enforcement or that particular component, that, again, you look at the data, you have to boil it down and say, and you look for the low-hanging fruit at first, but then also you want to look at your massive data and start extracting out what's bubbling to the top here. It's a challenge. You can swim in data all day long, and at the end of the day, you haven't done anything. But you have to start looking at the high points, and then start taking those and making sense of those. And then, for example, if you find a particular provider or provider group using a particular procedure code, now you may be looking at 10 providers, but what you're really looking at is, why are they using that particular procedure code? So you boil it down again, keep it simple, make it understandable, and get the right input from your other medical professionals and other group representatives to understand why is this happening.
Doug, there's an interesting question from the audience here, having to do with electronic health records, in terms of how far we are from interoperability. But in addition to, you know, what you may or may not know about interoperability standards, how do electronic records change the job that you've been doing all these years?
They're very influential because what's happening now is it's almost a check-the-box system, and it's prepackaged by many companies to facilitate providers getting the right information, especially with the advent of ICD-10 and other influences on that. The medical records are not they don't necessarily – they give you a template, but the template is already – pre-posted and you're just checking boxes. So it doesn't have the individualized notes and whatever of the provider. So again, I think there's the opportunity, whether even if you don't have investigative staff, if you have field representatives that can go out and talk to the provider or even getting on the phone and say, I'd like to know why you're billing this these codes this particular way. Get an understanding. And I think that's only fair to a provider. Even a provider that's way astray and is committing fraud, in fairness to the process, you have to understand their side of the story. They may be a criminal with two previous convictions, but in fairness to them, you have to understand why they're doing what they're doing. And as they explain it to you, if they're not doing it the right way, they're going to start going into little traps that you can catch, and then you can make a decision whether you want to continue with this provider or not.
Having seen some of those codes, I can imagine how somebody would make honest mistakes in those too.
That's typically a statement. I didn't understand. You know, I'm a medical practitioner. I'm not a biller. I'm not a coder. Well, it's your responsibility. You know, that's again where you want to ensure the integrity of the provider community. But again, you're also looking at patient safety because you don't want your customers subjected to unfair treatment or excess treatment that they shouldn't be receiving.
Now, how much of what you've learned through your experience applies just as well to non-healthcare companies? You know, whether it's a distributor in auto parts distributor or a manufacturer of some sort or a property insurer.
Well, I think any company nowadays has to have an analytical component. It's a tool. It's a solution that allows for decision making. It steps back and looks at your business to allow you to continue with your business. It aggregates all the things that you can't do or it would take you extremely long to do if you were trying to do it in a manual environment. So analytics, and again, you have to give it the right feed to get the right result out of the solution, but I think it applies across the board, even down to the fact that if you have your paycheck and you're trying to decide who you're going to pay first, you're doing analytics on an individual scale, but in a business, any kind of business, you need it on a more intensive scale to help with your decision making.
Doug, we're winding down to the last couple of minutes here. Let me just ask you this. Now, it sounds like Blue Cross made a commitment to fight fraud using analytics. And, you know, I would assume that they, you know, they made a pretty good investment in it. Some other companies are still resisting analytics. And even if they accept, even if they have an analytics team, they're not giving them the resources that they need. It sounds like anti-fraud, anti-analytics would be a great proof case for an analytics team to be able to show, hey, we saved the organization this amount of money. You know, analytics are important to us. We can keep saving money in other ways too. Do you see that? Is fighting fraud really just a good lever to drive analytics throughout the organization?
I do. I very much do. And I think any corporation or company, whether big or small, that is thinking about analytics should solicit vendors and have them do a proof of concept to demonstrate what they can do for the organization. When we went into our engagement with SAS, we first stood up the government component of it 6 months prior to the entire book of business, our commercial component. And after we went live with commercial, within 6 months, we realized about a 1-to-1 ROI against our investment, and now they're almost 2-to-1 against the investment. So what that suggests to the organization is that, hey, here's a solution that has more application beyond just the fraud space. Again, you can use it to make marketing decisions. The medical consultants can use it to decide, you know, should we really keep paying for this particular procedure code? Is it being overutilized? So there's a broad application for analytics within the organization, which again moves you to a payment integrity and a center of excellence concept where people are using analytics to make decisions at all levels.
I think most executives would sell their soul for a 2-to-1 return on investment on any application. Doug, how can audience members learn more about your consulting service or get in touch with you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. If they want to go on LinkedIn, there's my profile's on there. They're more than welcome to contact me, and I'd discuss whatever needs they may have and see if I can help them.
Great. Hey, Doug, thank you very much. This has been a great discussion. You know, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you. Let's continue this conversation in the text chat in just a minute. I want to thank our guest, Doug Cedrus, for being with us today and sharing his experience with advanced analytics in fighting fraud. Also, I want to thank our sponsor, SAS, and to all of you for joining us today. This has been Jim Connolly for All Analytics Radio and UBM Tech. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much, Jim. Thank you.